Welcome everybody to the latest episode of the Here's Johnny podcast. I am Larry.
I'm a very sleepy Justin.
Yeah, this is 2 weeks in a row. No, 3 weeks technically. We took a week off for the baby shower of double records, and we have more to come.
And not there was a week where we triple record.
I know. And I love recording. I love hanging out with you. So luckily, it's not hard. But at the end of a long work week, when we were talking in between the episodes, I'm not even going to play Final Fantasy or read my book. I'm just going to go upstairs and go to bed. And when my wife has to go to work tomorrow, I'm just going to get up with her and then do the stuff then.
Oh, I didn't tell you I had to work. Did I tell you I had to work last night?
No.
We had to do 2 hours of late night work when nobody else was awake so it wouldn't disrupt anything. That was
horrible. Oh boy, yeah. Don't worry. We are reviewing 20 Million Miles to Earth. I don't know how much will be said about this one, but we'll find out. But since we did what's new, there is nothing new. So I have 2 quizzes for you. Don't worry, they're both short.
Hell yeah.
The first one, how many friends would you say you have? I am literally the most sociable and gregarious person ever. Nope. Everybody knows my name, way more than I can count. I have a few closeness friends I can count no matter what. I'm a lone wolf. I have 2 best friends who I've known forever. I mainly have acquaintances, 1 best friend that has my back no matter what, and a few others. I'm in a few different friend groups, not many, but I'm trying to make more.
The one where you have a few really close ones that you can count on. I think it was like 4 answers ago.
It was?
Yeah.
There's a lot of answers for all these questions.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Where would your ideal vacation be? Hiking volcanoes in Hawaii, going to Atlantis in the Bahamas, chilling at home, riding jet skis in the Gulf, riding ATVs through the Colorado Rockies, ice fishing in Montana, dog sledding in Alaska, horseback riding in the Canadian Rockies, or golfing in Antarctica.
Chilling at home.
What's your favorite color? Gray, brown, green, red, orange, gold, orange. Turquoise. What's your favorite candy? Red Hots, chocolate, Mike and Ike's, Pop Rocks, Orange Slices, Lifesavers, Gummy Bears, Twix, or Black Licorice?
Damn, they don't have anything sour. I guess Gummy Bears.
Yeah, Gummy Bears or Mike and Ike are probably your closest thing for a sour. How would your friends describe you? Hot-headed, honest, extroverted, brave, adventurous, cheerful, creative, quiet, or shy?
Cheerful or quiet?
I want to say, as your friend, you're cheerful.
Okay.
More than quiet. Which is your favorite dog breed? Chihuahua, Australian Shepherd, a Lab, a Pug, a Great Dane?
Pug. No, didn't have to read better. Yeah, Pug.
What's your favorite fruit? Apple, watermelon, orange, strawberry, pear, peach, grape, kiwi, plum.
I do love me a peach. Good.
I can eat a peach for hours. Justin, I wanted to know what planet you are, and you are Saturn. You are truly one of a kind. You have a style, an aura all your own that separates you from the rest and leaves other people trying to figure you out. They may not have the easiest time seeing the full picture, and maybe that's for the best. You always keep them guessing. Let them guess away.
And sometimes I'm in retrograde and it makes people crazy or something? I don't know. Is that how that is? Is it Saturn that goes into retrograde?
I have no idea. All right, next one. What's your favorite color? Green, yellow, blue, red.
Green, yellow, blue, red.
Pick a dessert. Apple pie, milkshake, lava cake, popsicle.
Oh, milkshake. I'm a sucker for a milkshake.
What's your element? Air, water, fire, earth.
Air?
Pick a name. George, Marcy, Carrie, Sam.
Sam.
What of these things do you care about the most? Helping others, romance, the environment, or peace?
Helping others.
Pick a method of transportation. Hot air balloon, boat, motorcycle, airplane.
Oh my god, none of those sound great to do all the time. Airplane, I guess.
You do fly a lot now. Be honest, how often do you pass gas? All the time.
As much as possible.
All the time? What magical power sounds the coolest? Portal to different dimensions? A magical sword? love arrow that makes anyone fall in love with you, or flying shoes?
Oh, I want to say flying shoes, but what if my shoes fall off? Flying shoes, I guess.
And finally, what is your favorite planet? Venus, Mars, Earth, Jupiter, Uranus, Mercury, Neptune, or Saturn?
Earth, because it's where we are.
I'll tell you which planet you're actually from if you're brave enough to find out. Justin, this one says you are Jupiter. You're actually from Jupiter, the fifth planet from the sun and the biggest. Your home planet is named after the Roman god of the sky, also known as Zeus in Greek mythology.
Hmm.
And with that, Justin, let's talk about
aliens.
20 million miles from space, from Earth. So this film, which is also known as The Beast from Space, is a 1957 American sci-fi horror monster film directed by Nathan Giron. He started as an art director, winning an Academy Award for Best Art Direction for How Green Was My Valley in 1942, and was nominated again for the same award for his work with The Razor's Edge in 1946. His other most famous sci-fi horror work besides this was Attack of the 50-Foot Woman in 1958.
Weirdly enough, I think I've seen that on, like, what's that old fucking sci-fi channel? Oh, the Sci-Fi Channel.
Sci-Fi?
Yeah.
The film stars William Hopper, Joan Taylor, and Frank Puglia. Hopper appeared in over 80 feature films from the 30s and 40s. He left during World War II, where he served in the U.S. Navy. And when he returned to Hollywood, he had his most famous role, that of Paul Drake on the TV show Perry Mason. Joan Taylor had a lot of minor roles on a lot of different TV shows, and her other horror films for her credit was Earth versus the Flying Saucer. Puglia was known for his small but memorable roles in the films Casablanca, Now Voyager, and The Jungle Book, 1942, not the Disney one. The film was developed to showcase the stop-motion work from a man who we discussed earlier on the show, Ray Harryhausen. I wrote down Harryhausen when we reviewed Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. Production of the film did actually start in Rome before coming back to the U.S. to finish the shoot. Rome was chosen because Harryhausen wanted to go take a vacation.
Jesus Christ, imagine you could do that.
Harryhausen wanted the film to be in color, but the studio vetoed this due to budget constraints. But in 2007, 5 years after the death of the director, Harryhausen led an effort to make a colorized version of the film, and that colorized version was re-released alongside the black and white version to celebrate the 50th anniversary. Quick note, I watched the color version and Justin watched the black and white version.
Yes, that is correct.
In 2008, there was a 4-issue comic book series released called 20 Million Miles More, which picks up 50 years after the story.
Ha, okay.
I could not find any budget or box office information on this film.
I'm not surprised.
Trivia. Since he planned to use a real elephant for some of the footage in the zoo, Ray Harryhausen asked for one that was at least 15 feet tall, but the studio was only able to get an 8-foot tall one. In order to make the elephant look larger, they used a 4'6" actor to play the zookeeper.
Jeez. That's actually really... Hold on. That's actually really smart. Sorry. That's just... Yeah.
And there's a reason why we talked about why Harryhausen inspires so many people. And I think we'll probably get that in cinematography too. Like, when you think about the time and you think about using stop animation and like what he was able to really do with a lot of the set pieces,
yeah,
it really is quite impressive. Harryhausen's original design for the monster was a giant cyclops, similar to the one where he would use later in Seven Voyages of Sinbad. He discarded the idea after making a clay model of it, and eventually settled on the reptilian named Ymir. That is the name of our monster. The Ymir roars in the film are variations of elephant roars.
Sorry, does it ever say Ymir in the movie, or is that...
No.
Okay, that's why. Sorry, I was like sitting here when you looked at me. I was like,
"I did discovered it say that, that during it, my research."
Okay, no, not. Okay.
But yeah, the Ymir roars are variations of an elephant roar, sped up and modulated at different pitches. The distance from Earth to Venus, the closest approach is 39.5 million kilometers, which is actually 23.6 million miles. Harryhausen's famous arms back when moving forward stance for Ymir first appears here. Although it is now a trademark of Harryhausen, the reason he devised this walk was because he didn't have to spend time and money animating the arms.
Okay, that's fair.
Despite his ferocity, Ymir does not kill anyone in the film. He has not killed the dog, the farmer, the elephant, or any of the civilians in Rome. All can be seen breathing after their encounters with the beasts. He does presumably kill some soldiers at the Temple of Saturn and at the Colosseum when rocks fall on him.
Yeah.
According to Norse mythology, Ymir is one of the primary gods of creation. The fountain scene in the film in Italy is the same one used later in the TV show Friends opening credit sequence. The Cherry Hill Fountain is located in the backlot for the studios at Warner Brothers. Gene Simmons of Kiss is a huge fan of Ray Harryhausen. He has said that his stage moves are based on the way Ymir moves. Shout out Mr. Corson. Ray Harryhausen actually is in this movie. He plays the man feeding peanuts to the elephants. He did so because the actor scheduled to play the part didn't show up. You could also see him later fleeing with the crowd from the zoo.
Yeah, that's cool.
Plot. Our movie starts off with our with some people fishing off the coast of Rome, and a giant spaceship crashes into the ocean. They go to it. All the crew are dead except for two. They pull the two remaining crew member out, and they also steal a pod. One of the doctors dies, and the other one is alive, but he says that they were at Venus, which is where they came from, doing research, and they brought something back with them. The little kid who stole the pod sold it for some money so he could buy a cowboy hat to a doctor. When the doctor's wife, who is also our scientist slash military person's doctor, gets back to her dad's house, she discovers that this pod has hatched and a tiny little alien Ymir is walking around the table. He picks up this small soldier toy and shoves him into a box. They go to bed and wake up next morning, and Ymir is bigger. While Ymir continues to grow, he escapes, and they start chasing him across the Roman countryside. And they convince the Italian government to not kill him because of his importance, and they trap him using electric nets. They have him trapped. This is when our little love dynamic is happening between our scientist, military man, and our doctor, who is not quite yet a doctor, as she tells us. And the animal escapes and starts tearing apart through Rome. There's a really cool fight scene between the elephant and Ymir. Ymir eventually makes his way to the Roman Colosseum, where they attack and finally kill Ymir. And then our doctor, who is not quite yet a doctor, and our scientist, military man, presumably go off to a cafe to stop the candle from burning out and to probably make sweet, sweet love.
And I will say, after hearing that he did not kill anybody, they unjustly killed him. Unjustly, he didn't do, he yes. didn't do nothing. He didn't do nothing.
Plot. I wish they had never captured him, because it felt like the movie was going like this. Like, it's a podcast, Larry. So the movie was like building. Yeah. They captured him. It dropped off, and then it tried to get back up to it. And I wasn't buying, like, I was like, I kind of checked out. But I won't lie to you, when I realized that Harryhausen was behind this and how much fun we didn't have with Beasts from 20,000 Fathoms, I was concerned. But I liked this so much more than Beasts from 20,000 Fathoms.
I would agree. I think it has like an interesting, I mean, it plays out very interestingly. It's like, in a weird way, it almost kind of, almost, but not really, mirrors a little bit with King Kong with like capturing him and release and the climbing up the
Empire State Building.
You know, you get me. Sorry, I'm very tired.
I know.
But yeah, I do agree with you. I think that when they captured him, everything kind of halted.
Stopped. Everything stopped.
Like, I feel like we were almost at a breakneck speed, and they just slammed the brakes on. And it did really detract from the ending. Like, I mean, from
We
it
were
paying
still
off,
there like
really.
30 minutes, and like that's where some of the coolest stop motion stuff is happening, but like my enjoyment of the plot like just slid to a halt. The other thing that I just really didn't care for was the forced romance between the doctor, who wasn't yet quite a doctor, and our astronaut, scientist, military man, because it didn't seem real. There was no chemistry between them. He was a complete and utter dick to her when she was at the hospital, and then all of a sudden she's like in love with him, and then he's playing like, oh,
Because he's a strong man, and she's just a woman. She doesn't know, right?
and I just really couldn't buy into that. But when we get to audio, there was a performance that I loved. I was sad that Ymir died, because like you said, especially after finding out he didn't kill anybody, like it does have a similar vibe to what's it called, Justin? King Kong, right? Where like he was captured, didn't want to be here, escaped because of negligence, and this is where we're at. The other thing with the plot that kind of really annoyed me is that the other scientist who was pulled from the spaceship died of a disease that looked like parasites or
I
decay on
was
his face.
interested in that.
And like we never talk about it again.
And which sucks because, like, he. I feel like if they went with that, we'll get to this later, would have been way more horror.
Yeah, because they explain that the reason why they want to study Ymir is they want to be able to like walk around the like Venus atmosphere and be able to like survive and see how they're doing it. But it's not about this parasitic disease that killed his friend and killed the rest of the crew, presumably too. And that was just really strange. Like they introduce that and then just don't talk about it again. So I did like this a lot more than Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. I actually enjoyed this movie, but it's still like not that good. I gave it a 5.5.
I give it a 4.
Cinematography. I watched this in color because I had that 50th anniversary Blu-ray copy of it. It looks really good. I maybe it's because they did it so much. Like so much more recently that they were able to really do it justice. But I thought Ymir looked good. Like I told Justin, he didn't notice it because of the black and white, but Ymir kind of has this like mustache going on his
Oh
face.
yeah, I meant to look that up. I'm gonna look that up right now, actually.
I liked the stop motion in this more, and I'm not sure if it was because it was in color instead of in black and white, but I thought it just looked good. I don't know what the difference was between this and Beast of 20,000 Fathoms, but I really, really found myself enjoying the cinematography here. I loved watching him grow. I laughed really hard when he picked up the action figure off the table to put it in the cage because he wasn't even trying to pretend that it was moving in his hands. He was literally, it was as if I grabbed like one of my action figures that I have like hanging on my wall and was just walking around with it in my hand. So that made me laugh a lot. I liked the elephant fight scene with Ymir. I thought that looked really good, especially when you place it into the time period where it's from. I liked watching Ymir climb. But one of the things that really annoyed me is that like they lost Ymir a couple times and he's so massive. Like I can get him hiding in the river, but like when he's in the Colosseum, like how the fuck can't you see him?
Yeah, I would agree. And to your point, I just looked him up with the mustache, and that's actually really funny.
It is really funny.
Yeah, for me, it was just, I just thought it was like a part of his face. Yeah. I do think the claymation was done really, really well. I don't think it was done quite as well as King Kong. King Kong was like all time for me.
Yeah.
But it was done surprisingly well. I would agree. Them losing him is kind of fucking crazy. Like, that would never happen.
Yeah.
One thing I actually noticed is that, and I only really noticed it during the army tanks, like, shooting the Colosseum.
Yeah.
There are points where they shoot it, and he's, like, not there for the explosion to happen, and then, like, it cuts to the next frame, and it's, like, where they shot, and he's right there. That kind of, like, bugged me a little bit. But
the boulders crashing on the soldiers that are obviously filled with foam because they literally push it back up as it hits them.
Yeah. There's a lot of like weirdness, but I do think, like, especially for the time, it was done well. There is some goofiness to it.
But I don't mind goofy because, like, they were all playing into it. It felt like a fun monster movie.
Though the thing for me though is that other than the elephant and the ending, and, like, obviously, like, the creature overall, I didn't really care that much for anything, like, any of, like, the set designs this or anything like that.
Very generic. Very generic.
Yeah, and it sucks because it did have, like, the claymation was well done. But, yeah, I don't know. It was very, like, weird for me because, like I said, I enjoyed a lot of the monster-based stuff, but I didn't really care about anything else. Like,
sure.
Visually. Yeah.
Perfect. I gave it a 7. I really was impressed with the claymation. I love the mustache, and the elephant fight with Ymir I thought was really good.
I gave it a 6.
Audio. I loved the American general. Not the astronaut, but the general who came to help him. So often, and, like, I can't think of another movie where we get introduced to a person in authority, especially a military person, who is so willing to, one, listen to people who know better than him, two, take into account, like, local people's feelings. Like, when the Italian government was, like, he came to them first and asked for help, and then he gave the press conference to tell them what happened. Like, so willing to be open and discuss what's going on. And three, when he promised that kid the money for telling him what happened to the egg, and then not only does he give the kid his money after he tells him what happened, he, like, jokes with him about the cowboy hat and buying the ranch in Texas. Justin, I don't know what it was. That made me so happy. And the actor who played that general just, like, brought so much joy to me. After being in the military for a few years, I would be shocked if that kind of person actually exists. But I loved it. I thought that played into, like, the goofiness of some of the stop motion Ymir stuff so well, and I loved it. Like, it's one of my most favorite performances we've had in a while on this show, and I don't know. Like, it made me really happy. It's so stupid to say, but it genuinely made me happy.
No, I mean, I get that because I not to the same effect, but I do enjoy that guy's portrayal. It's when we get to the other stuff, like you mentioned.
Yeah. I like the little kid too. The little kid was okay.
You know what? Actually, compared to what we've had in the past, little kid was fucking amazing. But no, the little kid was okay. Everybody else is. I mean, this is. They are what I dislike about these old films most of the time. It's just very...
The romantic couple was awful. The scientist general guy...
Oh my god, and you're right. They had, like, zero chemistry, and it was like watching two people being held at gunpoint, forced to fall in love.
It's like watching a high school play where two people who used to date broke up, and now they're the romantic leads.
Yes.
Like, when she's... when the dinosaur is in the background strapped to that fucking bed and she's talking about her nightmare about being at a coffee shop and the candle burning out, I literally wanted to gag myself. I was like, bring back the fucking general. It was like, it wasn't like she was doing a bad job. It was just like, there was just nothing between these two people. And it's like the absolute worst fucking time to have this conversation. And it's like, why are we even doing this? We don't even need this subplot. And like, this guy literally was like being a giant dick to you and said you weren't actually a doctor because you were training to be a doctor and your opinion didn't matter. And like, I just did not enjoy their dynamic, and because of that, I had no like sympathy for him as he was chasing the. I actually wanted Ymir to eat him. Like, if there was one person Ymir did eat, it'd be the guy who forced him to come to planet Earth. But no, man. Like, everything else is just bland character acting. Like, it is of its time. It's that 50s, almost kind of nothing for me, at least, and. I know. I love that general, and so my score is going to be probably higher than you would expect. But yeah, and then there's no real score to speak of here either.
No, it, like, my biggest issue is just it's definitely from that era of film that I do not like.
I gave it a 6, and pretty much all of that came from the general. I literally cannot tell you how fucking happy it made me.
I gave it a 3 because, you know.
I don't know how to reiterate. Scary. It is not.
No, it's not. It's really not. Like to the point where we've had like King Kong and Godzilla, like there is subjectively a way to look at these films that can give it a good how scary score, and I just don't think that's the case here. I think it's just too goofy and too just like I said, I think if we went with the flesh eating disease, there could have been something there, but that's not what we got.
Yeah. Literally the moment this film had any kind of scares evaporated and gone is when that old man picked Ymir up like an action figure and carried him around for an extended sequence. And it's literally just a toy in his hand. Like, this is probably, isn't it a horror comedy? But like, if it was played for comedic effect, maybe this would be higher, since we do the how scary funny for some movies. Yeah, but that's not what the intention was. It's just goofy. It's like that late night 2 a.m. horror film they throw on, and it's just not scary. I gave it a 1.
I also gave it a 1.
To review our scores, for plot, I gave it a 5.5, you gave it a 4. For cinematography, I gave it a 7, you gave it a 6. For audio, I gave it a 6, you gave it a 3. And for how scary, we gave it 1s. That gives it a Here's Johnny final score of a 42. That is lower
than what we had before. Yeah, still not horrible, but, you know, it's...
It is tied with one thing, Aliens Fire Team Elite.
Okay.
The video game, the film below it is Lake Placid.
It's got some company, that's for sure.
And the film above it, Tammy and the T-Rex. What a collection of films. Guys, thanks for listening to our review. I want to play some music, and we're going to head on into the closing. Over and over again, who can we get on the case? Next week, when Justin is back from PAX, we will be reviewing the original The Fly, which means we're getting some more of that sexy, sexy Vincent Price on our screens.
Hell yeah. Oh, that's why you wanted to do this, isn't it?
I can't wait. Because I actually haven't seen it. I have seen pieces of the Jeff Goldblum one, but I've never seen either of them fully. We're going to do the other Fly later on in the year. Years since this season.
Yeah,
so goddamn years. Long. But yeah, it will also be double recording that night, which will be The Terminal Man, which will come out the week after that. Justin, anything else before we head on into the closing or head on into the campfire?
No, I got nothing.
All right, let's get this wrapped up so you can get to sleep. Everyone, thanks for hanging out with us and listening. And until next time, stay scary. The Here's Johnny podcast is brought to you by Larry and Justin. You can find the show on Twitter at Here's Johnny Cast, and you can find Larry at Beaver LA.
You can find Justin at Pickle Thing, and you can email the show at Here's Johnny Podcast at gmail.com. You can look us up on Facebook at Here's Johnny Podcast.
As always, in the show notes, you can find links to the Discord and to the website. We are also on Instagram at Here's Johnny _podcast.
Also in the show notes, we'll have a link to the Twitch and YouTube channels. And if you would like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/Here's Johnny Podcast. Every cent goes into the show. And yeah, we just really use it to make the show better. Again, I just want to say thank you very much to our patrons. You guys help make this possible.
But yeah, Patreon is the way we support the show. We aren't looking to get rich. And like Justin said, every dollar, every cent, it all goes back in. There's some pretty cool tiers, so head on and look at that.
But until next week, see you guys later.